And welcome to Greenberg News with your host, Brian Greenberg on WNJC 1360 AM. I hope one is and all is enjoying this fabulous weather here. I, for one, am not, but this time of the year, you know, I'm a CPA, my regular listeners know, and tax time is here. And frankly, when there's less distractions, it's a lot more easier to be focused and get my work done. So that's not too bad. Although I don't appreciate slipping and sliding to work. Although, oh, by the way, a caveat out there. For those people who want to get their car washed, if it's too cold of a day, do not do it. I had the misfortune of getting mine done the other day. And what happened was I'd get the car out, went through the car wash, and the soap was freezing up on the car. So I go to my car, you know, and they finish up, dry me off, and as I'm walking to the car, I start feeling my feet slide, my legs come out from underneath me, I land on my back, and my head whips back against the ground. It wasn't fun, but luckily there wasn't too much inside the head, so I didn't suffer any injuries. But so the thought for today, don't get your car washed in this kind of weather. I know, live with the dirt. Anyway, we have with us today a leadership expert, because if there's one thing this country needs, it's leadership. And that's Colleen Kettenhoffen. Did I get that right, Colleen?
Pretty close.
Pretty close. It's not right? I thought that was good.
Yeah, absolutely. It sure was. Better than most people. I know it's a tough one.
I've been around the block a few times. And you're a leadership adversity and change expert. And you're an award-winning speaker and author. And you're coming right here on Greenberg News. Oh, my God, this doesn't get better than anything. And you're here to tell us about, you got some big issues that we want to talk about. And, well, first of all, welcome to Greenberg News.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And, Colleen, most important, how is your last name pronounced?
It's spelled K-E-T-T as in Tom, E-N,
mm-hmm.
as in Nancy, H-O, F as in Frank, E-N as in Nancy.
And it's pronounced?
Kettenhoffen.
I was almost
See,
there.
You were close.
So you're of Irish descent. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Or you married an Irishman?
Yeah, believe it or not, English and Irish more than anything.
Now, this is you didn't marry into this thing, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay, because I was going to say, I would never will, you know, hey, God bless you, it's a nice name and all that, but, you know, whatever. So anyway, so Colleen, so well, Colleen, by the way, for our listeners, is in Phoenix, and she has some adversity weather-wise as well. Her weather, it's going to be 48 degrees tomorrow for Colleen, so feel bad for her. Anyway, Colleen, so the work environment is more brutal than ever. The economy is not good, and let's talk about, you hear we have a, quote, a stated unemployment rate of over 9%. I think the real unemployment rate is probably double that, people who've given up and no longer, you know, going to the unemployment office. So I don't understand why they would give up, because they all you have to do is just go online and type in your name and they send you a check, isn't it? Do you have to do much to collect unemployment these days?
You know, I am hearing, as you know, I've conducted seminars, speaking engagements in 48 states and 5 foreign countries for over 15 years, so I do a lot of leadership training for managers and supervisors and team leads, and surprisingly, I am hearing from a lot of them of a number of people who, I shouldn't say maybe a number of people, but, you know, definitely there are those few employees out there who, you know, have said they don't care if they get fired because they'll just collect unemployment. And believe it or not, even though some companies are fighting it, some of these employees are just appealing, and are getting it. And in some cases, just after having worked somewhere for 4 or 5 days, which you wouldn't even believe.
Wow. They're collecting unemployment. I think you have to work a certain amount of time.
I know. You do. That's what I've always heard, especially here in Arizona, and I know in New Mexico.
Well,
don't
only you have a history.
See,
maybe 4 or 5 days in one place, but if you go, you know, if you had a history of, let's say, 6 months, or which is typical in New Jersey, from 3 different jobs, it doesn't matter. You're only, like, 2 months in each job. As long as the cumulative is 6 months, then you're able to collect.
Oh, I see.
So that's how that works. So that make sure you have all the facts there. It's not that bad, but the reality is I know too many people who collect and work under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't no longer want to take the 8-hour, 10-hour paying jobs because they can do it otherwise. You know, they can work on a table, collect, and make their own hours and make more money.
And for a lot of people, too, if they're getting almost the same on unemployment as they would in a part-time job, rather than take a part-time job, which actually I think, you know, could lead to a full-time job, they'll just stay with the unemployment.
Yep. Not good.
No, especially for all the people out there, all the decent, hard-working people who maybe got laid off from their jobs and are really looking to find a job.
Well, so let's talk about, let's address those people who do want to work and are not satisfied just, you know, ripping off the government or ripping off their fellow taxpayers by, you know, running the scam. how do you find a good paying job? You say that they're still out there and there's a way to do it.
You know, I have interviewed a lot of, for the book that's coming out, Secrets Your Boss Isn't Telling You, I have conducted in-depth conversations with over 200 managers and supervisors, primarily mid-level, and then also some executives, senior vice president, executives, as well as CEOs. I want to say about 7 or 8 CEOs for the book. And one thing I heard from everybody is, because I actually tallied up all the results. I literally came home and I would tally up the results, whether it's people I met on airplanes or especially in my speaking engagements, where I would write all of this down and bring it home. And one of the big things that everybody said is, first of all, I want to know that they want to work specifically for our organization. And so a lot of people have said that one way they'll screen them by phone or email is they'll say, oh, and by the way, if you you know, have any questions about us, feel free to visit our website, and they give the website, and, you know, just come prepared with any questions that you have. And they said it's amazing how many applicants will not have gone to the website, even if the company is a well-known entity. So people really want to feel that the applicant specifically wants to work for their organization, and they've done their due diligence.
So people, they're that lazy that they choose not, they don't care.
You know, I definitely hear of people where they don't all go to the website, and I occasionally hear of people where the HR person or the manager will say, you know, after the interview, well, do you have any questions for us? And they said there are those people who will just kind of shrug and say not really, and to them that's a red flag that they don't want to work there.
Well, they may want to, quote, work there. It just seems like you have to put forth any effort to want to work there.
And well, and, you know, second on my list is enthusiasm and passion. A lot of employers said, I want to see that they're passionate and enthusiastic about the position they're interviewing for, because if they're not energized in the interview, they certainly won't be once they're on the job.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it, that they show up with that such little indifference?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, what percent of these people are your interviewers running into where they show up with that little preparation done in advance?
Well, they said for some of them, they will say that they have visited the website, but then when they ask them basic questions that would be on the front page, they said, you know, it's just amazing on the home page how many people they can tell haven't visited the website. So I found that to be rather surprising, and they said they were too. They think maybe in this economy people just, you know, at this point are just looking to get a job. And another thing at the top of the list was the ability to problem solve. And a lot of managers had said that sometimes they'll even ask a question where they know the applicant won't be able to answer it, or there's not a specific answer, and they will ask the questions for two reasons. Number one is the person being honest and admitting he or she doesn't know the answer. You know, maybe they'll say, well, I'm not sure, but if I had to guess. And number two, are they at least proactively trying to figure out the answer, because they want problem solvers, critical thinkers.
And now, give an example of where that, by the way, just one other point on the last one you're talking about with selection. My brother-in-law works for a large corporation. He does some of the hiring lower level. This is an accounting, you know, looking for accountants, and similar. A vast number of kids, these are right out of college.
Mm-hmm.
College educated, don't do any preparation prior to coming into the interview?
Well, I have to say probably the biggest complaint that I'm getting right now is the youngest generation, especially between 18 and 25, that they're coming to the interviews and they're not prepared, and they'll say somewhere, you know, throughout the interview, oh, well, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30, and they'll say, oh, really? You know, what are your goals and your plans for how to achieve that? You know, well, I don't know, but I'm going to be a millionaire when I'm 30, and I have to say, I don't see that in the speaking engagements that I conduct. A lot of the young people, they're sharp, they're engaged, they have energy, and I think probably it's because in my programs, they're usually managers and supervisors already, because I do a lot of training for managers in the areas of conflict resolution and dealing with difficult people. But absolutely, that's the biggest challenge I'm hearing about, is the people who are interviewing of the youngest generation. And can I tell you one other thing that
you tell me anything you want, Colleen,
to do?
Sure.
A lot of them have said that even though everything's online now, when an applicant drops off their resume or they come to pick up an application, they are saying to the front desk clerk, I want you to write their name down, and I want you to just jot down your first impressions. How were they dressed, and how did they treat you? Because managers want people
sure.
where they're dressed professionally. And I had a few of them say, look, you know, I hire people who may be working in a restaurant or in a bar, and I still want them showing up dressed professionally, even if it's not the interview. Because their feeling is, if somebody's coming in to the office, they should be dressed professionally, knowing that they might run into me. And if they're not dressed that way, it kind of tells me something about their judgment. And then I've
right.
had some
well,
managers...
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, yeah. And then some managers have said, I'll even say to the front desk assistant, when somebody comes to drop off a resume, pick up an application, come and get me. And the reason they do that is they want to interview the person off the cuff, just for a minute or two, just to kind of see how they are.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, it's funny. I heard this story. I forget what position the person was interviewed for, but and this is firsthand that they, you know, the person went out to interview the applicant, and the mother and the father were sitting alongside the applicant.
Oh my gosh. I'm hearing they're negotiating salary, perks, and benefits, kind of like what you have said, although, oh my gosh, that would have been great material for the book. But I've heard managers, and I'm hearing this in every state, they will offer the young person a job, and their parents, or one of them, is calling to negotiate salary, perks, and benefits. And then, of
wow.
course, the offer is rescinded.
Oh, my gosh. Unbelievable what's going on out there. So these just seems like just basics, but people don't even do that, I guess, huh?
Well, and you know, it's interesting you would say that, because one thing I say in the book is this is common sense, but common
right.
sense isn't always commonly
applied.
And maybe more especially with people who are younger. You know, I think if it's a different generation,
right.
then it may be different. And certainly other key things that they look for that you would expect, they've said if somebody is late to the interview, their history. You know, I might interview them for a couple of minutes, but in my mind, that's it.
Right.
You know, certainly experience and the right skill set. Eye contact and mannerisms. But a lot of people said to me, all things being equal, I would be more likely to go for high will and low skill. They really
oh, absolutely.
Want somebody who's malleable and trainable.
Well, because clearly what that's about is if you show the inclination, the effort to work, then the other stuff will come along.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you show that you really want to do well and this is how, you know, this is where you want to be, then you'll get there. But if you don't have the inclination or the desire, I don't care how intelligent you are, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think a lot of managers learn that the hard way. Usually their difficult employee is somebody that they inherited, not somebody that they would have hired. And so now they're realizing when they hire, it's more important to really, really take your time and not rush just because you might need somebody. Another thing that I'm hearing about is a lot of organizations are doing panel interviews or group interviews where when they have it narrowed down, they're really bringing in all of the team members, or they're telling the applicant that, you know, if we invite you back, it's going to be for a half a day. We want you to meet all the different people in the office. And one of the reasons they do that is, you know, we tend to hire in our own likeness. So it's tempting to want to hire someone like you,
right?
And maybe you need someone completely different. And sometimes other people can pick up on things that you can't pick up on. But they said the real thing is, it's they want to see, is the person going to fit in well? Is there going to be chemistry? Are they going to get along? Because one of boss's biggest pet peeves is negativity, the chronic complainer with no solutions.
Well, you know, I'm just curious, by the way, and this is, my situation, or what first I see, I should say, is that oftentimes men, there are more issues with men than women. And that,
oh, you
that
think
women
so?
Are much more stable in their work environment than men.
Really?
Yep.
In terms of job history, do you think?
Well, and just performance, I don't know. I just sense that, depends on what the position is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I just think where that the work effort, the ethic is better is with women than men. Depending, again, obviously it's a high-level position. A man obviously will do what needs to get done. But when it's more detail-oriented, the women will outperform.
That I can definitely see, and I've heard that from sales managers about salespeople. They think that, you know, women are so often raised to think of the needs of others, listen, be considerate, that they think women do great at sales.
We've got about a couple minutes left. I guess I'm bringing this all to a head. So what's the most important thing when you're going for a job that people should be left with, other than what you've mentioned so far?
I think one key thing is to know that in the back of the interviewer's mind, when they're asking the different questions, they're thinking, how is this person going to make me look good in the eyes of my peers? How will having this person on my team benefit me personally?
And that's how you have to
position
yourself.
I think any answers you give should... Pardon me?
And that's how one needs to position themselves, to do the homework, to understand how that's going to play out.
Right. And just to know that the manager is probably overloaded, like so many people, one person doing the work of three people. So, you know, how can you demonstrate that you will make their job easier?
That's most people, vast majority of people out there, young people, have not grasped that basic concept.
I don't know.
I mean, how's it now? You do consulting nationwide. Is there any regional differences you notice between the level of competence?
That's an excellent question. I'm going to say an answer that's not correct. But
we love that.
What a lot of managers have said to me is, if they're in a state where the unemployment payout is high, they have a harder time motivating people to stay there, especially the 18 to 25-year-olds, because they say a lot of them are living at home. They have absolutely no expenses. Their parents are coddling them, paying for everything. And so if they get let go and it's based on their pay scale, they can earn a pretty decent amount on unemployment. Whereas for somebody who's older, where the unemployment, you know, where they're not getting as much, with unemployment, there's more of an incentive to keep your job.
They want 100 people. Mm-hmm. With that, Colleen, we are out of time. You will keep in touch, I hope. And we want to get you.
Absolutely.
Are you coming into the Philadelphia area anytime soon?
You know, I don't have plans to now, but I'm certain that I probably will in the next year or so.
Well, you know, you have an open invitation anytime to, you're in the area, to come on in.
And I would love to. I would be honored.
And the honor, mutual, my dear. I think you do an outstanding job. And where can our listeners learn more about what you're up to?
My website is www.bouncebackhigher.com, and that's H-I-G-H-E-R, as in bounce back higher from adversity. And until the book comes out in roughly early April, late March, we have articles on the website. There are CDs and lots of great information that people can get.
And I see you're petting, it looks like a pit bull there, so be careful.
Oh, my rescue dog.
Oh.
And I just rescued another one Sunday,
so I'm happy about that.
Well,
with that, we are out of time, Colleen. Thanks so much for coming on today on Greenberg News. Keep up the great work, and keep me posted on all your goings-on.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And that wraps up this segment of Greenberg News. We're going to take a brief break. Be right back after these messages. And we're back with Greenberg News and your host, Brian Greenberg, on WNJC 1360 AM. For those out there, if you're about to leave your car or, you know, you're not near a radio, you know, you can always catch us on the Internet at WNJC1360.com. And by all means, you want to check out any time. Also, if you have tax questions, you're always welcome to call me or at toll-free at 877-274-9000. Or, most importantly, you can email me at brian@greenbergcpa.com. And with that, our next guest is Glenn Falavolita.
Exactly.
Did I get that right?
You hit a home run with that, Brian.
Oh, my God. This is, you know, my previous guest name was Kettenhofen. These people are killing me today here. Glenn is the CEO and author of Drip Marketing, the powerful new marketing strategy that gets prospects to buy from you. And Glenn, welcome to Greenberg News. Glenn's website is dripmarketing.com. And this is the essence of what marketing should be today. Marketing in the 21st century is clearly and simply drip marketing. Is it not, Glenn?
It is. And the reason why, Brian, is that we're doing more work with fewer resources today than ever before. And if you look at our life, we see 3,000 to 5,000 marketing messages a day between going on TV, going by billboards, reading the paper or magazines. We see thousands of marketing messages, and the only way we really do that is break the clutter by developing powerful marketing messages. But more importantly is that you need to slowly percolate your prospects out there so they remember that you're an option when they're ready to buy.
So now how do you, but it's not like one size fits all. You don't just keep, like I was talking with someone today that, maybe somebody I know in my industry, and he's sending out emails like every other minute. I think, or maybe other day or something, I think she said. Or 6 hours every day, or whatever it is. And clearly, that's the extreme of doing drip marketing.
Oh, it is.
In essence, not really effective, I would think.
No, it's like sheer water torture. If you're doing that type of frequency,
right,
it is sheer water torture for your target audience. And in fact, in the book, I outline the components of a drip marketing system. And quite honestly, that frequency and recency, and the frequency is how many times you plan on dripping on them throughout the month. And the recency is the distance between each drip. And those are the two critical elements to it outside of what your content is.
So how is it, now you know that let's walk us through the whole process. When someone comes to you and you want to help develop a marketing, I'll tell you what, even better. Why not use me and an accounting firm? This is a seasonal business, but what
right.
the hell, I'm willing to throw myself out there, bare my soul with, to get a little more insight into what you do works for their business.
And, you know, the first thing, Brian, is I tell everyone that drip marketing system is built around a universal process or universal system, and it's really composed of six elements. And then I'll jump right into this about your situation right after I tell you this.
Sure.
Number one, I clearly go to the whiteboard and I would say, number one, you need to build an up-to-date database of clients, prospects, past clients, and referral sources. Because no matter how good you are in marketing, if you don't have an up-to-date database of those people, it doesn't do you any good at all. The second one, and you fit this because you and I have known each other for years, is that you need to develop a unique selling proposition. You know, what makes you any better or different than somebody else in terms of articulating that in your marketing messages? And we talk about how to break that down into simple snippets of information so that people want to receive your marketing messages. The third component of the six steps is really how to develop a marketing strategy. The fourth one is how to develop a marketing budget and a direct marketing calendar of events. The fifth one is a proactive sales follow-up strategy, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And then the last one is really developing motivating marketing messages. And if you think about it, those six elements universally appeal to every single business across the country, whether you're a B2B or a B2C. Now, specifically for you, I would tell you, Brian, we need to go through and build that database. And email marketing is a very cost-effective way to market yourself. If email marketing was a dollar for every time you send it, people wouldn't do email marketing. But it's a dollar that drives the decision of how to do email marketing.
Sure.
But across the board, my company, Drip Marketing, Inc., will send out probably 4 million emails for its clients in 2011.
Wow.
We do a lot.
4 million?
4 million.
Oof.
And the national open rate is roughly around 12 to 14%.
That's not very high, is it?
No. So think about it. More than 85% of the people out there aren't absorbing or reading your marketing messages. So email marketing is not this silver bullet. It's a great adjunct to your marketing campaigns. And it's instantaneous. You get to send it out. It's very cost effective if it's done right. So that's why I would tell guys like you who own their professional practice to look at it saying, email marketing is going to get you X, Y, and Z. And this is what we need to do in terms of frequency and touches and campaigns for you. And then we also need to blend in direct mail campaigns into that as well. Because if you think about it, email marketing bolted up to a direct mail campaign with a proactive sales follow-up on your end would be wonderful. I mean, I would have you do workshops. I would have you send out your database and breaking it down in terms of, and you're basically going out to the consumer model, so you've got more of a business-to-consumer for the most part, and then I'm sure you have the B2B side. And we would create monthly newsletters or biweekly newsletters that are strictly educational.
Well, yeah, that's fine. I'll tell you what I'm doing. So that I have my monthly newsletter, which is merely it's my way to vent my libertarian views, and it's more therapy than functionality. But I get nice feedback on it and all that. But it's not really directed to. I give insight into what I think is going on in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But what I just found recently, you know, I'm as part of my CPA practice, I'm also a financial advisor. And I found a company that through my financial advisor firm that where they send out a weekly podcast.
Okay.
And it's done automatically. And this way, it's more topical. Like they did something on power of attorneys this week or last week, and this is estate planning. So just different concepts and ideas that people should think about in the whole financial process.
Absolutely.
And
great.
I think it's great. I mean, it's number one, I don't have to do anything. And yet I'm looking for is just to put in information that people should be aware of. And if they want to proceed further, then and do that. So I like the content. I like what I'm doing. And also, as much as I like to tell people what I do, you know, people know primarily as being a tax preparer, that I have clients who I've told them over the years that I do financial services still only think of me as a tax preparer. So I had a client of mine. I've known him for like 15 years. And I talked to him a few years ago about his insurance. They needed some review, and we sort of let it go, and then we got in earnest recently. And he said to me with a straight face, I didn't know you did this when we had a conversation like a couple years ago about it.
Brian, it happens all the time. Statistically, let me tell you a little statistic, and I've done a lot of research that sits behind the book.
Right.
In 48 hours after talking with someone, they'll forget 80% of what you have told them. So think about it. Within 2 days, they have to get 80%. You think after a couple of years they remember anything about you?
At least they got my name right. They know where to find me each year for taxes. So
well,
and
of course, those weekly drips that you do, I mean, the monthly drips you do is great, but think about it from the standpoint of your marketing campaigns need to be looked at in terms of educational. It's broken down into three parts. There's educational campaigns. there are true sales campaigns where you're actually selling something at that moment in time, because I think you are a for-profit business, Brian.
Yeah, I clearly I am.
I know you are. So you do have to sell.
I admire people who work without a profit motive, but God bless them.
That's right. And then the third theme that we tell people is it's informational. Send out a press release. Those are it's informational-based themes. So in the book, I tell everyone that, number one, 50% of your marketing messages need to be educational, because if you're doing so many campaigns and you're selling all the time, they will no longer open up your campaign, whether it's a direct mail piece or an email piece.
Right, that you're just like, oh my God, this guy's harassing me.
He is. You become a stalker, not a business. You become a stalker at that point in time.
A stalker accounting firm. That's not good. I don't want to be known as that.
That's right. You don't. You really don't. So from my side of it, I tell people, keep it simple. In your world is that you want to share your knowledge, because you need to be the fountain where all knowledge flows from when it relates to your specific expertise. You need to be that fountain of knowledge. So it's the Brian Greenberg Fountain of Knowledge.
So
and we're making money over here, by the way, too.
Absolutely. But it's now, so I got it. But let me ask you, by doing the podcast, isn't that message strip marketing of getting in front of people each week and all that?
Oh, absolutely. It's only, it's a small piece of your overall
strategy.
It's
part of what I should be doing. It's not all of what I should be doing.
No. And what happens over here, it's easy to write a check. It's easy to forward something that we get in private label and push it out there.
Right.
The real dollars will come to you from having a defined marketing strategy and saying, okay, let's create a 1 or 2 page strategy. Let's say, here's what we want to do. Here's what we want to budget for, and here's how we'll get it done. Here's how we'll build up our databases. And I tell everyone, go to my website, sign up for my newsletter. It's an automatic event that they do. They opt into my email marketing campaigns, and all of a sudden, they become part of the drip. And in the book, I clearly outline that it took 189 touches or drips before someone said, Glenn, I'm ready to buy from you. I got every excuse. Oh, this guy's name is Matt. And I said, Matt, you know, drip marketing and dating are identical. You know, the first time you go out there and market to someone, you don't say you're ready to buy.
Right.
And the first time you meet your spouse, you don't say you're ready to marry me. So
I got engaged after 2.5 months. I don't know. Is that that's pretty quick.
Well, you went to the quick trip.
Yeah, I had a quick trip plan then.
Yeah, you closed early and closed off.
Absolutely.
You're just good at that. Some guys take 8 years for that to happen.
Well, that's because they don't want to close. That's
a whole other issue.
Absolutely.
That's another radio station.
another program on
that's
that.
Right, that's right. But the key here is understanding that exactly what you're saying is that a podcast is part of your drip. But what is it as it relates to your overall strategy? And that's the key. How does it relate to the overall strategy? And how is that going to help us, number one, position us as an expert, and number two, drive income into the business?
Well, I'll tell you some other things. I've been fortunate over the years. I've developed a local media. I've gotten a lot of exposure. I've been on Fox TV.
Great.
And doing different items here and there. And I've got my name out, and people sort of know me. But yet, that hasn't translated into anything. So I show it on my, I have a clip on my website and all that, but it hasn't really gone beyond that.
No. Now, did you send out a press release that you're...
That I was appearing on there and all that, I did that.
Okay, did you do a press release on after the fact that they can actually download the video on it or watch the video on your website?
I did not do that.
Okay, that's an item that you can do off of that. You know, on your monthly newsletter.
It is it right to have a link to that?
Is it, exactly. Have a
right.
Hyperlink sitting on your email marketing newsletter that goes, you know, click here to watch me on Fox.
Gotcha. Right.
Because what happens over here, Brian, is that at any given moment in time, 9 to 18% of your database is actually thinking about what you're selling or considering recommending someone like you to a friend of theirs. The problem is, only 0.5% to maybe 2% are what I consider is an immediate buyer. So when we drip on people, oh gee, that didn't work. Well, it did work. You're building trust, credibility, and brand recognition, because if you think about it, a very small percent are actually the now buyers, that immediate buyer. So it's perfect. You just need to put it into your overall strategy, and you'll hit
home runs all day long. So what's the missing hole in that? Like I said, I'm fortunate in what I do that with my tax practice, it's repeat clients. But yet I want to convey to them these other financial services I have.
Right.
Without being in their face that I'm doing them, but rather that they should really, that they should be thinking of some of these ideas that I've been recommending.
Well, it's very critical that you develop a strategy to cross all other services to your database. It's very critical for that. So look back and say, all right, what am I going to do for email marketing? What am I going to do for direct mail campaigns? What am I going to put out on my social media accounts? And then you say to yourself, okay, this is what I'm going to be doing, and this is what we do for our clients. We literally create a 12-month drip marketing calendar outlining all the events that will happen. So the idea is to create a plan and then work the plan.
You want me to work it, too, now?
Well, that's,
you're tough.
And that's the frustrating part for a lot of owners, is that if they don't have the resources to actually get the stuff done. That's why people hire us. So if someone's sitting out there right now in their car or at their home or at their office, and they're saying, how am I going to get this done? Well, either you need to work double time or reach out to a company like us and say, hey, at least create a template. Or, Glenn, what do you recommend for content? You know, the easy part is writing people or telling people what you do. And the toughest part is saying, okay, how do we plan on selling ourselves without sounding too pushy?
That's the magic mix, isn't it? The magic elixir.
Well, and then you come up with a strategy, Brian, that say, okay, now we know what's important to people. And it could be someone, are you frustrated with the excessive cost of college? Or do you have someone going to college in the next 12 to 18 months?
Well, it's funny. Actually, you were talking about college. Through my association, I'm part of this affiliate with this company called, or a nonprofit organization, American College Foundation, that gives each year a $5,000 scholarship.
Wow.
And they give smaller scholarships nationally. And I want to, and what I've actually been hired to them as a local rep, we're working with some of the high schools in the area to communicate that to their students, and they basically asked me to evaluate to make sure the student's interested and legitimate, and then I basically give the stamp, and then they go on, and there's no obligation, no fee, no nothing.
That's great.
So I need to convey that, I guess. And how do I convey that?
Well, that's with your risk-free offer. Every marketing campaign needs four components. Number one, it needs that motivating headline,
right,
to get them into the marketing message. Number two, you need to validate that emotion with a logical supporting statement to show them that, oh, if they read what you have in this, it will actually solve their problem. The third part of it is you need to educate them on the value or of what your information is, and it gives them a risk-free offer to take the next step in the buying process. Because that's what we fail to acknowledge are the people out there that, you know, there's only a small percent who are ready to buy right now. But if you think about it, Brian, there's a lot of people who are thinking about what you're talking about. They're just thinking about it.
Right.
They need a low-risk way to be educated on what you do, because you have a relatively long selling cycle. It's not an impulse buy.
No.
So you need to position yourself as an expert and then give people the tools or the white papers to learn more and say, oh, by the way, before you even meet with me, here's a preview kit of what this is all about. Keep it one page, keep it simple, write for double readership, which I outline in my book, and it's great. You'll be hitting home runs by creating this strategy.
So, Glenn, we're about a minute left here. Why don't you bring it all home?
Bring it all home.
Yes.
Is real simple. As we look at our business today, we need to create, every business needs to work on creating a strategy to acquire new prospects, creating an up-to-date client database, and referral sources. Two, develop that unique selling proposition. Number three, develop a strategy, a 1- or 2-page marketing strategy. Four, develop a budget and a drip marketing calendar of events you plan on doing in 2011. And then five is having a proactive follow-up strategy. And six is learning how to develop a motivating marketing message. So critical is knowing how to write a message that's going to motivate someone to take the next step of the buying process. And that's what it is, and it will never change as long as we're in business.
Outstanding, Glenn. Give our listeners a plug for your website.
For anyone out there who is frustrated with their marketing, go to dripmarketing.com. I've got tons of free resources, white papers on that data, on that website. Again, it's drip, D-R-I-P, marketing.com. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us over here. Phone number and all information is on dripmarketing.com. And thank you, Brian.
And don't wait to be the 189th time for Glenn to contact you. Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it.
Brian, have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
All right,
take care,
bye.
Alan. That wraps up this segment of Greenberg News. We're going to take a brief break right back after these messages. And we're back with Greenberg News and your host, Brian Greenberg of WNJC, 1360 AM. Again, just a reminder, it is tax time, and I'm always glad to help my listeners out. You can email me at brian@greenbergcpa.com. You can call me toll-free at 877-274-9000 if you're so suitably concerned. And but again, this the key, I just give everyone a heads up, if you are itemizing your return, meaning you have a mortgage and tax deductions, you will not be able to get your refund, or you can be even to send electronically until middle of February. Hopefully, that's what we've been told. The government is working its way to fix what their problems are with the new tax laws, and we're going to see what we can do. But how are we doing there, Ginny? We got Ginny Clark on the line here, and I didn't quite get it. We'll work around it. Anyway. Ginny Clark, who is Ginny Clark is a former executive recruiter and college recruiter who's created a proprietary map that allows people to take control of their destiny and tap into that goldmine of employment opportunities that exist in spite of the recent recession. Ginny, welcome to Greenberg News.
Thank you. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing outstanding. I've been remiss. Her new book, Career Mapping, Charting Your Course in the New World of Work.
Yep.
What's going on in the world of work? Is anyone working these days? I got something just to get into your book and all. You know, we've had snow days, where we had one day last week, not the bad storm, but it was early in the week where there was a little bit of snow in the morning and it looked like it was going to be a lot. And the result was that everyone just called it a day and stayed home. What's that all about?
Well,
I'm telling you, there was no traffic. I never saw it was even a Saturday. It was like late Sunday evening or something, or I don't know when it was, 3 in the morning. I never saw such light traffic at rush hour on the middle of the week.
Isn't that great?
I love driving it, but where are these people? Why, and they weren't around all day either. They just called it a day and stayed home.
I'm in Chicago right now, and
God bless
in the midst
you.
Of a blizzard. So
it's hitting now, that blizzard. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I hear they're calling for 2 feet of snow, if I'm not mistaken.
That's what they're saying.
Lucky you.
I know, right? My son's home from school.
2 days. So he's going to be home for a week then, I guess, right?
Let's hope not.
Yeah. Now, I thought you guys are pretty good as far as clearing everything out and making sure things work.
Oh, yeah. And I live close to the mayor, so we get good snow removal over here.
Hey, I got to ask you, I know this is not why you're here, but what's the deal? You guys are going to like the, what's his name?
That's my bet. He's favored. Rahm Emanuel's favored.
How does a guy become favored when he's been in Washington? Has he been involved in Chicago politics?
Yeah.
I know he was a Congress, but I didn't realize he was directly involved. I mean, how's is opposition also pretty weak and ineffectual?
There you have it. Lesser of all evils.
that he can spell his name and they can't, is that it?
I think that's it.
the choices are that weak?
I've had the same mayor for over 20 years, so...
Yeah.
People are
well, that was Daley, right?
Daley.
Yeah, well, I thought that there's no grandchild, there's no dessert to bring him in there?
No. No descendants.
Oh, that's terrible.
Two-generation limit.
Is that what they said? They pointed out because I would think that they would want to bring someone else in there. I mean, it's not right. They should just end with the son. they should at least have like some kind of convention there where you can beat up, crack some heads.
Leave on a high note.
I guess so. That's a whole other story. Okay, so that's why Rahm Emanuel was the odds-on favorite.
Yes.
But anyway, but let's get back to you because. I had the pleasure of meeting Ginny, and I'm telling you, the sharper gal you'll find is Ginny Clark, and she really knows her stuff. And I wanted to kind of say, let me get the sense for what is the job market going on these days? Where are people, and is it a whole new dynamic, or is it just because the economy's lousy.
Oh, there's still opportunities out there for people. You know, it all depends. I mean, you know, when we talk about jobs, and there are jobs for college graduates, there are jobs for, you know, 25-year seasoned executives and everything in between. So, you know, kind of depending on where you are in the whole scheme of things, you're going to be challenged. But part of the issue is people need to know how to look and how to be selective. And you think, well, what right do I have to be selective when there are so few choices? But in reality, there is a lot more than what you might see from postings and even from the job numbers that come out.
But what's the mentality of the workforce today? Are people still hungry for work, or is it just, you know, I was commenting on, well, we had the snowstorm, and people can't wait to not show up for work.
You know, I think
Or is that just the depression of the economy?
I think the depressed economy took a real hit on people's morale. You know, some people were thinking, well, maybe I want to go back to school, maybe I want to change jobs. Well, I can't. And so some of it is in their head, and some of it is, but I think people want to work. You know, I think we're all hitting up against this idea that we were going to be more prosperous than our parents, right?
Right, that's the whole thing.
Yeah,
so I don't think that's going to happen.
It's not going to happen. I have a 14-year-old, and I doubt that he'll be, you know, adjusted for inflation as successful as I have been in some years. I would like to think so,
right.
But it's not a guarantee anymore. And so I think everybody's trying to kind of come to grips with that. And people are really at odds. There's a lot of odd behavior going on in terms of some of the choices that people are making relative to their careers.
Well, let's wait. The cost of living today is soaring.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the only Americans are responding is by going into debt, more debt to afford it. And that's not a winning proposition. Eventually, you can't do that anymore.
Right. So how do you get out of that? Either you cut down on your spending or you go get a higher-paying job. And most often, higher-paying jobs come with higher requirements, either through education or experience. And so, you know, you got to be hungry,
right.
Bottom line. I fundamentally think that there's sort of two sides to the equation. There's the employer, there's the employee. I think employers are going to have to do a better job of creating greater efficiencies in their organizations. Because I think, you know, as we move into this new age that we're in, some call it the conceptual age, moving out of the information age, we're really going to have to the best talent is going to be hard to come by. And companies are going to have to really work hard to earn having the best talent. And arguably, a lot of companies don't always have it. You know, there's not great efficiency. And there's not great systems for even identifying and retaining talent. So that's part of the issue. And then there's the job creation piece of that a lot of these companies are responsible for. But meanwhile, I think people are figuring out that, you know, that myth, if you will, that notion of security has kind of dissipated. And they're going to have to be a lot more self-reliant. And sometimes they wake up and go, you know, it's not that they're cavalier and say, I don't need my job, but I bet I can earn a similar income by doing, maybe it's consulting or creating a small business or doing something else other than this sort of 9-to-5 thing that I've been doing for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years.
And it's a job. You know, I was talking with someone who was trapped in a job like that, and actually the company just pulled the plug, was in the mortgage industry. And I said that, you know, I know you need the money and all, but I think they did you a favor. There was no future there.
Right.
You know, you need to build something that where you can grow. I mean, yeah, you had an income, but, you know, you aren't going to make any more money, and ultimately it's going to be hurting you.
Well, I'd like to think that many of us are motivated not just by money, but by what challenges us. You know,
right.
what gets you going? What gets you engaged and interested and wanting to contribute and wanting to think? And no, it's not just having a lot of money. It's not just traveling around. It's, you know, what means something? And I think a lot of us have been forced to question that. And I would argue that even, you know, going back to 9/11, a lot of people did that little, for a moment at least, for a moment in time, questioned what is it that I'm really doing here. And I think we're all being forced to kind of look at that again as we face some of the harsh realities of a weakened economy.
But even with that, but now there's more of it's just a lethargy, and as I said, it just seems like that people are going in a different direction. And rather than confronting head on and saying, how am I going to, improve, there's like people are just like a melancholy is setting in.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And I think, people are going to have to snap out of it because there are going to be those who are aggressive and who are determined, and they're going to be the ones that win the jobs. And or they will create those job opportunities or those small businesses. They'll create that income, that wealth. Maybe it's not a lot of wealth, but a livelihood for themselves.
Right. But it's so let's give our listeners some specifics how they can do to help achieve that to be able to survive the new millennium.
Well, the whole premise of my book was taking what I learned as someone who started out as a French linguistics major and moved into banking and then commercial real estate and then the executive search and now an entrepreneur. So I've changed careers 5 times. Someone who's done that, plus being an executive recruiter and watching how so many people really were lost at various times in their careers, and the executive search process. So I combined all of that, and I created this map. It's my own proprietary map, and the career mapping term is not, I didn't coin it. It's been out there for a while, but my process really forces people to look at what is it that you've done, what are the elements, what are the industries and the functions and the roles, and then let's talk about some options of what you might want to pursue, and then identify what it really takes to get you there. So do some real harsh gap analysis to determine, can you do this job that you say you want to do? Do you have the competencies? Do you have, the experience? Do you have the certifications? Do you have what it takes to actually do it? And now, what is it going to take for you to do it? And creating an entire action plan to network your way into creating opportunities for yourself.
Well, I think so. We have a few minutes left here, so I want you to take your valuable knowledge and expertise and help build for that individual how to focus and to truly utilize it. What I find, I'm curious, by the way, what percent of the people you think hate what they do every day?
I saw a number once, and I think it was somewhere around 40.
I think that's low.
It was more like 47, I think.
Yeah, whatever. Well, maybe I'm right. I don't know. I guess it depends. It just seems that, that's not true. I should say most people hate what they do. I guess certain professions, there's a high number. Like I found, for instance,
dissatisfaction, let's call it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, in the law profession, I find a lot of, most attorneys hate what they do.
Yeah.
And that's because they have gold, I call it golden handcuffs, that they, you get paid a decent compensation or above decent, but you hate what you do, so you have to stay there, and then you get depressed because you can't leave because you're making all this money.
Yeah,
and then
because
you're making that money, now you're spending more than your means to help perk up your depression, and it sickles, and it's a mess.
Yep, it's a mess. That's right.
But
for somebody like that, I would urge them to first get it out of your mind that you can't make a move. That's all in your head. Adjust your lifestyle so that you've got a little wiggle room and you can find something else to do. There's plenty of opportunities for lawyers in the corporate world, in the small businesses. There's lots of, and you don't even have to stay with law. There's so many segues that lawyers and other professional people can make. You don't have to live the degree that you've achieved. You don't have to do just one or two things that are, in lockstep with that degree. Witness, I'm a French linguistics major who went to business school.
You were French and business. That's interesting.
French and linguistics and then business, yes.
Okay. That's quite a work. You had this, and a business load is alone is enough, and yet you found the time to go French linguistics as well, which is very demanding.
Right. Yeah. Well, I got my master's in business, my MBA, so that came later.
Okay, but still,
the
fact that you had to put that all together, that's a tremendous amount of energy and effort you had to put in.
Well, many of us are driven. We're driven to try to find that thing where we can serve others, where we can have a sense of satisfaction, and hopefully enjoy a nice lifestyle.
And so what other challenges do you think that people need to overcome? Let's continue with the whole concept of the person who thinks they're trapped by their wages and their compensation and they can't get out of it.
Well, I really feel strongly that people need to set about a strategy. And, when you come to that fork in the road, when you say, I just can't take it anymore and I really want to find something else, start doing this analysis that I'm talking about. I'm doing some webinars beginning next week. that you can sign up for on my website. And the book will be out in just in another month in ebook form. And so, you know, read the book and understand what the map really is. It's like a diet. You've got to do this. Nobody else can do anything for you. So you've got to decide that you've got to, you know, sit through, do the analysis, and make a plan.
Well, that's a great segue because we're wrapping up. Tell our listeners how your website and how they can get to that webinar you'll be offering.
MyCareerMapping.com.
And the web, and this is a webinar that's going to be running when?
On February 10th, next Thursday.
Oh, that's next week.
8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central.
Oh, I'm so glad we got you on ahead of time. I'll promote this event. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, Jenny, you know, I'll tell you one thing. I'll shoot you an email after, but tell your base to tune in this Thursday. They can learn, hear more about what you have to say. And in turn, that's a way for them to make another contact for your webinar that you're going to be running next week.
Terrific.
Thank you so much, Jenny Clark. All the best. One last time, your website is?
MyCareerMapping.com.
Great.
All
thanks again for your time, Jenny. Take care.
Thanks, Brian. You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Karen. Great show as always. Have a good week, everybody. And you've been listening to Greenberg News.